Uuwi na ho ako. Uuwi na po ako. Anyat, nung pagkakuha ko ng bill, tumayo po yan ng mga, aram ko mga 4:30 ho. Sinabi, oh, meron dyan dalawang bags, 10 million ng isa. Tapos bigla po siyang umalis. Eh di, hindi ko naman po maiwan dahil nga ho, nandun yung dalawang bags. Tapos nung bumalik ho siya ng 5:30, seconds lang ho. Seconds lang ho, i-check nyo ho sa CCTV. Tumayo po ako. Tumayo ho ako. Dahil nga sabi ko yan, hindi na namin kailangan yan. And then anong sabi ni Sombero? Hindi sir, dalhin nyo lang, hawakan nyo lang ito.
That was the voice of former Immigration Associate Commissioner Al Argusino in a Senate hearing in January 2017. He was describing the early morning of November 27, 2016 in the City of Dreams, where former Police Colonel Wally Sombero gave him and fellow former Associate Commissioner Michael Robles 50 million pesos. It was a bribe, so the Bureau of Immigration would release the Chinese workers of Jack Lam's casino in Pampanga. The Chinese were detained by the Bureau for being illegal aliens, and Sombero acted as Jack Lam's middleman. Argusino claims he and Robles kept the money as evidence against Sombero.
Ano man, ba? Alam ko po, naiintindihan ko, meron po kaming indiscretion dito. Pero ito ho yung nangyari, 2 a.m. ko lang po na-meet yan si Sombero. Ngayon, kung may pagkakamali ho ako, ay yung pumayag ho ako mailagay ito sa aking kotse. Pero sinabi ko nga ho sa kanya nung nasa elevator kami, sige na dyan na yan, kunin nating ebidensya. Pasensya na ho kayo.
This was the first corruption scandal that truly rocked the Duterte administration early in his presidency. A not-so-small detail is that Argusino and Robles are President Rodrigo Duterte's fraternity brothers. Former Justice Secretary Vitaliano Aguirre, also Duterte's fraternity brother at Lex Talionis, was implicated. According to the Bureau's intelligence officer Charles Kalima, it was Aguirre who endorsed Sombero to Argusino and Robles. The day before the 50 million payout at the City of Dreams, Aguirre met with Sombero and Lam himself. The Senate Blue Ribbon Committee reprimanded Aguirre, but cleared the former Justice Secretary in the final committee report. Aguirre ordered an NBI investigation into his frat brothers, but later said they found only 49,999,000 pesos, 1,000 pesos short of the 50 million threshold for plunder. Former Ombudsman Conchita Carpio Morales would push through with the plunder complaint and disregard the missing 1,000 pesos. But later, upon inspection by the court, the money turned out to be 50 million pesos after all. After 3.5 years of trial, the Antigraft Court Sandigan Bayan 6th Division convicted Argusino, Robles, and Sombero for plunder and sentenced the three of them to reclusion perpetua. This marked the first case of plunder that was filed, prosecuted, and resulted in a conviction under Duterte. But plunder cases are rarely this short and easy. Hello, I am Lian Buan and you are listening to the Law of Duterte Land podcast, where we discuss controversial policies of the executive, gaps in the law, and court decisions that shake long-standing principles in the legal profession. In this episode, we will talk about the difficulty of proving plunder in the Philippines. We will talk to former Justice Undersecretary Jose J.J. Justiniano, who was a deputized prosecutor at the start of the pork barrel scam cases under the Aquino administration. Hello, Attorney J.J.
Hello, good afternoon to you, Lian.
Sir, I'll start kasi I've counted in the history of plunder since it was enacted law in 1991, only 7 have been convicted. That's ERAP, a cashier at the BIR, Janet Lim Napoles, and Richard Cambio, of course you know. And then itong tatlo, Al Argusino Robles and Wally Sombero. Why is it hard to get a plunder conviction here?
Yes, because the requirement of the law is that the offender must accumulate, amass, acquire ill-gotten wealth. And how do you prove that unless you have a whistleblower? Or if there are documentary evidence such as the anti-money laundering council report, which would show the amount of money you have, that can also be approved. But the best evidence really is a whistleblower.
Sir, parang ang hirap namang hanapin ng whistleblower because not everyone would have the guts to come forward and really face the sound of the justice system. So don't we have other systems like financial trails and, you know, bank forensics to be able to find this kind of money?
That is what I said a while ago. A report by the Anti-Money Laundering Council. That's a good piece of evidence. And in fact, we used that in the prosecution of the plunder cases when I was still an undersecretary in the Department of Justice. We can also use the, title, other evidence of ownership of property because plunder is not limited to having money. It could be stocks, other assets.
Sir, as you said, one of the threshold for plunder is it must be at least 50 million pesos. Apart from that, what do you think is the hardest element of plunder to prove?
The hardest is how do you prove amassing, acquiring, accumulating? It may be easy to prove receiving kickback, commission, misappropriation, but how to prove the amount is a different matter. You cannot just go by testimony that, well, I gave him 50 million pesos by way of bribes. It is not a strong evidence.
Sir, you mentioned the ill-gotten wealth because that's one of the elements of plunder. Dun sa pork scam cases, sir, you had to prove that the money was really a kickback received by the senators because otherwise kung parang na misappropriate, pangit yung pagkakagawa, pangit yung paperwork, there were ghost projects. Otherwise, it couldn't have been plunder kasi that's maybe just graft. Tama po ba? The difference between graft and plunder.
Well, there are 6 or 7 predicate crimes of plunder. Receiving kickback is just one of them. And another one is malversation by a public official. Those are the 2 common modes of committing plunder.
Sir, can you explain briefly the difference between bribery and malversation?
Bribery, in layman's term, is when a public official receives a form of consideration in the form of money, property, for him to do something illegal. Now, malversation is a crime when a public officer has custody of public funds and he misappropriates it, meaning he cannot account how he spent the amount in his possession.
Yes, sir. I remember yung mga Binay cases, these were overpriced projects allegedly no, sa Makati City. But all the cases that went to the Sandigan Bayan have been graft. And I was told way, way back in 2017, I'm not sure if this is still the status, that the ombudsman was still studying yung plunder aspect of those cases. Why is it so hard to establish plunder when you have all these supposedly overpriced projects reaching more than 50 million?
Maybe the Sandigan Bayan did not believe that the project was really overpriced.
Sir, sa ombudsman level, they haven't yet
The ombudsman level. Okay. Again, we go back to what is required. Was there evidence that the Binays got at least 50 million as a result of the transaction or the contracts which they entered into on behalf of the local government of Makati? It has to be proven. It is not just a matter of 50 million being overpriced. If you want to prosecute plunder, you have to prove that 50 million went to the pocket of the respondents or the suspect.
Yes, sir. That was going to be my next question. So during your time, when you were prosecuting the pork barrel scam cases and you were in partnership with AMLAC, how do you establish that 50 million, at least 50 million went into the pocket of these public officials? So when kung ako, if I'm going to steal 50 million, I'm not going to have it deposited to the bank account under my name. I'm going to have it deposited in so many other places. How hard was that for you and AMLAC?
Oh, there is such thing as related account in the anti-money laundering law. It doesn't have to be deposited in your account. But if one account, you can establish the connection of another account with your account, movement of money, that can also be used. Now, you're talking of the PDAP cases. One of the evidence which we use is the testimony of Ben Harluy and the 2 other whistleblowers. Now, from their testimony, the DOJ went to the Anti-Money Laundering Council and we asked them to examine the bank account of the suspects. Mm. They prepared the report, gave it to us. After the examination, we studied the report and we were able to establish the connection between the testimony of Ben Harloy and the other whistleblower saying that they remitted certain amount to this politician. We compared it with the report of the AMLAC and we were able to find out that within a period of 30 days, let's say, according to the witness, there was a deposit of 10 million today. Within 30 days from today, we were able to find out that there was indeed a deposit to the account of the suspect. Mm. That's how we do it.
Yes, sir. I remember that. That was the AMLAC report in the Bong Revilla case where the AMLAC has established na yung mga date na sinasabi ni Ben Harloy na nag-remit siya, more or less yun din yung date na may pumapasok sa account ng senador. And I remember the AMLAC also found amounts deposited to a company registered under Lani Mercado in a time where there was no, walang operation yung company. But we know now, and of course you know that the Sandigan Bayan majority of three found that circumstantial evidence lang daw yung merong pumasok sa isang nakatenggang kumpanya. First of all, you prosecuted this. How did you feel when Senator Bong Revilla was acquitted?
Well, it is water under the bridge, but I would not have joined the prosecution team if I were not involved, if I were not convinced that there is enough evidence to establish his guilt. You have to understand that that's just my view. It's the court who will decide.
Yes. Sir, I also wanted to talk about circumstantial evidence because as the decision, the first division decision in the Bong Revilla case, they said nga the money that went to that company was only circumstantial. But in the Argosino Robles case, they were discussing, the sixth division was discussing, sometimes circumstantial evidence can also be enough. So when is circumstantial evidence enough?
Ah, yes, you are correct. Circumstantial evidence may be able to establish the guilt beyond reasonable doubt of the accused. But you have to examine what are those circumstantial evidence. If one circumstantial evidence prove a certain matter and there's another circumstantial evidence proving the same matter, you connect all of them, it can also establish the guilt of the accused beyond reasonable doubt.
To explain to the viewers, the circumstantial evidence in the Argosino Robles case is because the immigration officials actually held a press con and claimed, oh, we're actually whistleblowers. We took the money to be able to out Wally Sombero and Jack Lam. But the Sandigan Bayan said, if you were really just to out to be whistleblowers, you should have told your superior, si Commissioner Morente, at the very first instance. You should have returned the money at the very first instance. So for the court, that's already circumstantial evidence that you took property of the money, as in you really purposely wanted to get the money. So ganun ba yung mga circumstantial evidence?
And plus the fact that 49 million, less than 1,000.
Yeah, less than 1,000.
So why will they return the money if they did not in fact receive it?
Yeah, actually, sir, what's really not entertaining or fascinating, what was really interesting to me in that case was that, if you remember, the DOJ Undersecretary Aguirre said there were only 49,999,000. So they were missing 1,000 pesos. And at the ombudsman level, even though they were missing 1,000 pesos, Ombudsman Conchita Carpio Morales still indicted them for plunder. And then when it reached the Sandigan Bayan, the justices went into a personal inspection of the vault sa land bank. Mm. And they counted the money manually. And they were able to count. There were talaga 50 million pesos. So the court can also be proactive if it really wants to.
In fact, if the court has some doubt on a particular issue, it can call their own witness. They can do that.
We will take a short break. Here's a glimpse of other Rappler podcasts.
Next time, huwag ninyo akong pariginigin ng revolution. Naku, Diyos ko. Yan ang mas delikado sa COVID. Kaya kung mag-revolution kayo, you will give me the free ticket to stage a counter-revolution. How I wish you would do it.
Don't understand what President Rodrigo Duterte is saying? Want to know the story behind his words? Listen to Seat of Power, Rappler's political podcast about the Duterte presidency, hosted by me, Pia Nada, Rappler's Malacanang beat reporter.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Law of Duterte Land podcast, and we were talking to Attorney JJ Justiniano about plunder cases and the challenge of winning them. Do you recall a time, sir, in the pork barrel scam cases when you were there and also when you've already left, that you saw a proactiveness on behalf of the justices of the Sandigan Bayan to, you know, see it for themselves, find evidence for themselves if they have doubts?
My participation there, in fact, I have to be candid with you, I was not able to finish the case. Yeah. Right after I resigned from the Department of Justice. So, in fact, in the Bong Revilla case, I did not even reach halfway, meaning the stage where Bong Revilla is supposed to present his own evidence. Mm. So, based on my limited participation, I have not seen any act of the court which may be considered proactive.
Mm-hmm. Sir, yung Argosino, it started 2017. I think the informations were filed in 2017. Ang bilis natapos the justice system considered. 4 years. Anong kaibahan nito sa, for example, the case of Senator Enrile, which was stuck in pretrial for so many years? What's the difference between the two cases? Bakit ang bilis nung kina Argosino?
Well, in the plunder cases or grab cases pending before the relating to the pork barrel scam, there are many interlocutory matters which had to be resolved by the court before the case can proceed with the trial on the merits. For example, there is a question as to whether or not the information is sufficient. So in the case of Senator Enrile, I think he filed a motion for a bill of particulars. Now, without that motion being resolved and bill of particulars being supplied by the prosecution, his arraignment cannot proceed. And that's what I can remember. Also, in another cases, they questioned the finding of probable cause by the ombudsman. Hmm. So they questioned that before the Supreme Court. Then, cause of delay again. Hmm. But apparently, in the case of Argosino Robles and the other guy,
Wally Sombrero.
It was Sombrero. Those things were not raised by the defense counsel.
Yeah. And in the cases of Argosino and Robles, they filed a demurrer without leave of court. So they actually waived their right to present evidence. So was it just a matter of, you know, lawyer strategy, legal strategy na para sa pork scam cases, ang daming final na interlocutory pleadings ng mga abogado ng mga senador. They even went to the Supreme Court to get a bill of particulars. So minsan ba it just boils down to who your lawyer is?
You know, kanya-kanyang diskarte abogado eh. I can only speak for myself. But each of us, every lawyer has his own ways of handling the case. And that's a trade secret.
Sige sir, I'll try kung mapipilit kitang mag-reveal ng trade secret. But if you were to defend a plunder defendant, what would your strategy be? Would you really avail of all these interlocutory pleadings, go to the Supreme Court, file a bill of particular? Like in this case of Jingoy Estrada, he filed a second motion for bail na sinabi na lang omnibus motion. What would your strategy be? Papahabain mo talaga?
I might be disbarred by the Supreme Court if I speak my mind. But that can be done.
So parang the processes of the court, particularly the Sandigan Bayan, if you want to prolong your trial, you really can.
Yes, of course. Candidly, we did it when I was a new lawyer. But not plunder at that time. It was still martial law. I was working under the late Senator Jose W. Jokno, the father of Chel Jokno. And we were handling the lefties. Those charged with subversion. And we know at that time that we will not win the case, but it was under martial law. So we were hoping for a change of administration, we use all this dilatory tactics just to delay the case.
Yeah, and I mean I know that lawyers know that. I think there's no point in pretending that pwede ka naman talagang mag-file ng mga interlocutory pleadings just to prolong your trial. Sorry, going to another issue, the Arroyo PCSO Intelligence Fund scam that she was acquitted by the Supreme Court in July 2016. This was the Lucas Bersamin Ponencia of main plunderer. Sir, was main plunderer in the law, in our plunder law? And ano ba yung main plunderer? Can you explain to the viewers ano yung requirement ng main plunderer?
Main plunderer is that the one who committed any of the 6 or 7 predicate crimes and that you got money out of the commission of that offense. In the case of Mrs. Arroyo, there is no proof that the intelligence fund which cannot be accounted went to her pocket. In fact, to be candid, when it was filed, I already thought that she will be acquitted.
Sir, but is main plunderer found in RA 7080? Is there something that would point na, okay, may requirement pala na main plunderer?
That is implied in the law, the 780. When the law says accumulate, acquires, amasses, then those three acts must pertain to the main plunderer. There is, of course, let me go further. Even if you are a private individual, if you are in conspiracy with a public official who is found guilty of any of the three acts which I mentioned a while ago, you can also be convicted for plunder.
Siguro, sir, to the non-legal minds, medyo nako-confused lang kami kasi it's a conspiracy. Paano kung equally kayo, in equal parts kayong tatlo, kayong lima, o kayong sampo, you conspired in equal parts. And there's no main plunderer, ibig sabihin, no plunder happened because there was no mastermind.
Hindi. When you say conspiracy, the act of one is the act of all. When we speak of main plunderer, there must be a public official, again I will repeat, who amasses, accumulates, acquires ill-gotten wealth. Now, if you apply this in the case of Mrs. Arroyo, there is no proof that the intelligence fund of more than 50 million went to her pocket. They just said, Office of the President. But who in the Office of the President?
Sir, let me go to Senator Jinggoy Estrada's pork scam cases. He was able to win his petition for bail because the 5th Division, Special Division, said walang plunderer at this point, so the evidence of guilt is not strong. So, para sa inyo, is there no main plunderer? I mean, I know I'm asking you to kind of prejudge or pangunahan yung korte, pero deputized prosecutor naman kayo nito, wala bang main plunderer sa ganung sa pork scam cases, may Napoles ka, may senador ka, is there really no main plunderer?
Meron, of course there is. The one who received the 50 million is the main plunderer if he is a public official. But Speaking of the case of Senator Estrada, I think at that time, the prosecution is not yet through with the presentation of evidence. So maybe from the perception of the court, they believe that at the time the prosecution has not been able to establish who the main plunderer is.
Before I move on to my next question, basahin ko lang, sir, yung mismong wording ng Special 5th Division. Sabi nila, there is no strong evidence to show that Senator Estrada is a main plunderer. So yeah, you're correct. At that point, hindi pa convinced yung court. But sir, does the main plunder requirement just made it harder? Hirap na ngang mag-prosecute ng plunder, made it harder for prosecutors to prove plunder. And is that a bad thing, a good thing, or just a right thing? Kasi this is liberty of people you're talking about. You're gonna send them to jail indefinitely.
You know, unless the law is amended, unless you remove the three acts of amassing, accumulating, acquiring, you cannot dispense proof of who the main plunderer is.
Kasi tama lang na may ganitong requirement. It's not...
Tama lang, correct.
Hindi, it's not so unfair to the prosecutors.
I'll give you an example. Misappropriation, public funds cannot be accounted. Okay, more than 50 million. Let's say I am the public official accountable for the public funds. I cannot account it. So that's already misappropriation, malversation. But if there is no proof that the 50 million went to my pocket, there is no plunder. I can only be prosecuted for malversation of public funds, but not plunder.
In your experience in the PDAF scam cases, what for you is the bright spot of our investigators? Ano yung sophistication ng combined forces ng NBI, DOJ, and Office of the Ombudsman when it comes to investigating and prosecuting plunder? And on the other hand, what did you notice were the weak spots of these investigation units na tingin mo kailangang i-improve?
I will give credit to the NBI. They were diligent in, you know, building up a case against the politicians. There were lots of documents which they have to examine, and they did that. Now, I will also give credit to the Anti-Money Laundering Council because they helped us a lot. And of course, the whistleblowers. Because this pork barrel case will not be noticed were it not for the disclosure made by Ben Harloy when he was allegedly kidnapped and rescued by the NBI. Nobody knows what was happening at the time.
So largely testimonial po talaga ang bubuhay sa mga ganitong kaso.
That will be the lead. That will be the lead. In any investigation, there must be a lead for the investigator to pursue the lead provided by somebody.
Sir, during your time, anti-graft division ba ng NBI yung partners nyo in building up the case?
No. Special action unit.
May special unit.
Yes, special unit.
Which?
By Deputy Director Agrabioso. That's that of that, that unit.
Which brings me to my next question, sir. We've talked about this before. I've written a story quoting you before. Yung task force on corruption ng DOJ, and people were asking, why is the duplicity kung DOJ papa-investiga sa NBI, tas i-forward din naman sa ombudsman when ombudsman has its own fact-finding division? What's the value for you of involving the NBI and maybe the DOJ dun sa case build-up nitong mga corruption cases, whether that's graft or plunder?
Because DOJ and the NBI have more people who can investigate. You must understand that the limited manpower of the ombudsman.
Bakit hindi na lang dagdagan yung power ng isang independent constitutional body like the ombudsman instead of relying on the executive agency?
Maybe no budget.
So it's really just pera and manpower to strengthen.
How can you hire more people if there is no appropriation or additional personnel?
Oh, tama. And that's what the former ombudsman and the current ombudsman have always been fighting. More budget for the agency para hindi rin umaalis yung mga prosecutor nila to seek a higher paying job.
Yes, of course. But my understanding is that the entry-level pay is good already, comparable with the big law offices in Makati or in BGC.
That's good. I mean, we want to pay our government lawyers. We want to compensate them well. Okay, that's enough time we have for this talk. Thank you so much.
Okay, Leah. Thank you also. If there's anything that I can do which can contribute to your crusade against corruption, let me know.
Yes, of course. That was Attorney JJ Justiniano. I am Lian Buan. Thank you for listening. Follow us on our social media accounts for more news, videos, and podcasts. Listen to Raptors Podcast on Spotify, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, and wherever it is you get your podcasts.